A reading from the Gospel according to John. The next day, when the people who remained after the feeding of the 5,000 saw that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they themselves got into the boats and went to Capernaum looking for Jesus. When they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, "Rabbi, when did you come here?" Jesus answered them, "Very truly I tell you, you are looking for me, not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves." I like how he doesn't actually answer their question. Reading continues. "Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For it is on him that God the Father has set his seal." Then the crowd said to him, "What must we do to perform the works of God?" Jesus answered, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent." So they said to him, "What sign are you going to give us then, so that we may see it and believe you? What work are you performing?" As if they haven't seen enough by now, right? Anyways, I digress. Continuing, they said, "Our ancestors ate manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." But then Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it was not Moses who gave you bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is that which comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." The Gospel of the Lord. Every summer, the great people of Missouri, actually it's pronounced Missouri, they flock by the thousands to several of the smaller rivers and larger streams throughout the state to engage in an activity called floating. To most native Missourians, it's like a birthright. It's like, even if you don't like baseball, it is just assumed that you will still worship the St. Louis Cardinals nonetheless. It's a strange phenomenon. One summer day, you will suddenly find yourself sitting in the bleachers at a Cardinals game, and you will think to yourself, like, "Wait a minute, what am I doing here? It's freaking hot, and I hate watching baseball. Why am I here?" But you can't actually bring yourself to leave because you feel like you would break some sort of supernatural law if you were to leave the game early. And it's also assumed that every Missourian loves pimento cheese or Emo's pizza. Tell a Missourian that Emo's pizza tastes like cardboard with cheese melted on top of it, and they will ask you if you have ever considered moving to Illinois. In the same way, if you don't go on at least one float trip per summer, preferably more, people there will begin to wonder what's seriously wrong with you. "Oh, yeah, he must be from Illinois. Bless his heart. That explains everything." So what they do is they either purchase or rent inner tubes, and they gingerly float down these calm rivers and streams on what is basically an inflatable donut. And many, if not most, they decide to make a camping trip out of it. So they haul along tents and food and all that good stuff as well. But of course, the most crucial element of it all, the cornerstone of the whole experience, is beer. Cheap, cheap beer. And the attitude is that the more cheap beer you bring, the more epic your float trip is obviously going to be. And this is precisely the difference between a float trip and a river rafting trip. In rafting, there are rapids, and you're moving pretty quickly downstream. You actually have to, like, paddle. It takes some exertion. In floating, however, it's different. There are no rapids. You don't even have to paddle. The whole point is about not exerting yourself. You just let yourself float slowly downstream. So there is zero chance that you will ever drop your PBR in the river. The kingdom of heaven is like a redneck on a float trip. Now, this is not to say that every person who goes on a float trip is a redneck. No, actually, like maybe that is what I'm saying. The kingdom of heaven is like a person on a float trip. All they have to do is sip their Bud Light and let the gentle stream carry them along. To what else can we liken the kingdom of heaven? To what else can we compare it to? The kingdom of heaven is like going to the chiropractor. If you can simply let yourself rest in her hands, she will adjust you, and everything that needs to get popped back into place will get popped back into place with ease. But if you tense up because you anticipate the pop, there's a chance that you may get injured. The key is to let yourself rest in her hands, to not worry about the impending pop. In so many ways, faith is about simply letting yourself float downstream. To be cliche here, right? But something that most people don't get, I think, is that it's also about letting go of all anticipation. The more we resist God's healing touch, the more prone we are to damaging ourselves. In our gospel reading for today, the story picks up where that famous story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 has left off. Jesus leaves the field where the people were fed, and he makes his way to Capernaum. Now, a remnant from that group of 5,000 people, they realize that Jesus has left them, and they go to seek him out. Once they finally find him, he says that the only reason why they are there is because he fed them the day before. In other words, they're hungry and they're looking for another free meal. And then Jesus tells them that it's more important to work for the food that endures for eternal life and not for the food that spoils and rots and perishes. In other words, he tells these people that they're missing the point of what he is all about. They followed him there for the wrong reasons. Not that there's anything wrong with ensuring that people don't go hungry. There's nothing wrong with feeding people. But Jesus, what he's saying here is that he's here to offer us so much more. Like he didn't come just to satiate a grumbling stomach, but he came to heal and to nourish the whole person, all of life. So the people, they ask him, like, what must we do then to perform the works of God? They want to know how to work for the food that endures for eternal life. And Jesus responds by saying that the work of God is this. This is quite profound. The work of God, the thing you must do, is believe in the one whom God has sent. So the work, the doing, is belief. It's faith. The work is no work at all. The work is the realization that one no longer has to work. That this relationship with God, it's actually not at all about work, about doing stuff. And the work of God is about adopting a posture of acceptance, accepting the relationship as it is, not as we want it to be. The work of God is about simply letting Jesus be who Jesus already is to us. And this is key. The work of God is to let yourself float again downstream. And it's about trusting that even though you don't know where this stream is going to take you, God does. It's about trusting that. But then comes that part of the story that tends to really confuse the crap out of people, and rightfully so. The crowd asks, so like, what sign are you going to give to us that we can believe you? What work are you going to perform, right? And most folks who read this part of the story, they say, hey, like, wait a minute. Jesus just performed a sign in front of, like, all of you. He just fed 5,000 people, and you all were a part of that group being fed. How much more of a sign do you need? But it's the next thing that the crowd says that holds the key to clearing up all of the confusion around this part of the passage. They say that our ancestors ate manna in the wilderness. And what they're referencing here is that ancient story from Exodus, where God rained down bread from heaven on the Hebrew people to eat every day, so that they could survive during their time in the wilderness. So it's not as though this crowd didn't believe in the sign that they all witnessed the day before. Like, they saw it and they acknowledge it. Their point is that Moses fed the people in the wilderness every day, and not just on one occasion. So what they're saying is, Jesus, feed us like Moses fed the people in the wilderness. Feed us every day. Do today what you did for us yesterday. They want Jesus to do the same thing as Moses, to repeat the past here. And they are even anticipating that this is precisely what Jesus is going to do, what he's all about. In essence, they believe that they are going to relive this extraordinary event from the past with Jesus. Now, notice how this conversation has played out so far. Jesus tells them that the work of God is to simply believe him, to simply trust him. But the people basically respond by saying, right, that's what we're doing, Jesus. Clearly, you're going to do for us what Moses did for our ancestors. We believe that this is what you're going to do. We have the faith that this is what you are going to do for us. Their necks are in the chiropractor's hands, but because they are anticipating the pop, they have stiffened their necks, and the chiropractor can't actually heal their ailment. Specifically, they are shaping their anticipation of their future with God off of a past experience with God. Their faith is limited to the confines of a past experience. As wonderful as it was, their faith is still limited. And Jesus is saying that he wants to do way more than Moses ever did. But the people never quite understand what he's getting at because they have become so accustomed to believing that God is limited to acting in certain ways. So for them, faith is about repeating past experiences. It's not about venturing into uncharted territory with God. Even their last line to Jesus in this story, it reveals just how much they have missed the point entirely. He tells them that the true bread from heaven is not something that he gives, but this true bread is something that he is. But they respond by saying, sir, give us this bread always. The thing is, like, they already have it. It's standing right there in front of them, looking them in the eyes, talking with them. But they can't see it. Their faith is so confined to a previous experience of God that they can't break out of that narrative long enough to see the new experience of God standing right there in front of them. One of the great English mystics from the 14th century once wrote, and I reference this an awful lot, but it's so important. He once wrote that even if Jesus were to fully appear to you in all of his heavenly glory while you are praying, you should carry on as if nothing at all had happened after this vision has ended. Why? Because when we dwell too much on our past experiences of the divine, it actually blinds us from our present experiences of the divine. The reason why so many people these days feel off spiritually is because they are trying to relive the past, while God is actually trying to open them up to a new future. God is trying to teach them that all they need to do is let the stream carry them along to new and beautiful places. But they are too busy swimming upstream, trying to get back to that one beautiful spot that they stopped at that one time and that they really enjoyed. Yes, this beautiful spot, it may have been magnificent and life-changing, but it will always pale in comparison to the next spot on the journey. My friends, the work of God is to simply believe. Faith, belief, it is resting in God. It's resting in God's resting in you. And faith is not about believing that God will treat us today in the same way that he treated us yesterday. Faith is the belief that our today with God will always be better than our yesterday with him, and that our tomorrow with God will always be better, deeper, stronger than today. The moment that we ask God to repeat the past, we are no longer acting out of faith. Faith is not about trying to control what God does in our lives. Faith is about relinquishing all control, detaching. Faith is about realizing that it's better to let the stream carry you along into a better tomorrow than it is about trying to swim upstream back to that place where you were yesterday. And besides, right, the more you swim upstream, the more likely you are to drop your beer. There's a metaphor in there somewhere. I'll let you figure that one out. If you have the ears to hear, then hear. My friends, God does not put any conditions on the love that he shows us. Therefore, we shouldn't put any conditions on our faith in him. So don't ask for the manna of yesterday when the true bread from heaven is always fully before you, with you, alongside you.